Hoosier Ag Today presents your Purdue Extension, a podcast network. A podcast partnership between Purdue University Extension and Indiana's most listened to farm radio network, Hoosier Ag Today.
Welcome to Purdue Crop Chat, a regular podcast from Hoosier Ag Today and the Purdue University Extension Service, featuring Purdue Extension soybean specialist Dr. Sean Castile and Extension corn specialist Dr. Dan Quinn. Now your host for Purdue Crop Chat, Hoosier Ag Today's Eric Pfeiffer.
Welcome into the Purdue Crop Chat. It's presented by the Indiana Corn Marketing Council and Indiana Soybean Alliance. Eric Pfeiffer here from Hoosier Ag Today. We're at the Indiana Corn and Soybean Innovation Center, and the stars of the show are here. Dan Corn Quinn. Hello, Dan.
Hey, Eric.
And soybean Sean Castile. Sean, hello.
Howdy.
Gosh, what's happened since we last got together a couple of weeks ago? An awful lot of harvest.
A lot of harvest.
That's happened. I went to Dan's homeland. Here, yes,
Great White North. Yeah.
Yes, I got to Saskatoon, Saskatchewan. That's where you're from, right?
Down under, too, right? Yeah, you kept
yes.
on going.
That's, yeah,
that's
we
Saskatoon.
Saskatoon. I was only like I'm a mobster. Saskatoon. You know,
we'll take you places where you're no one will find you.
Literally 1,000 meters below ground. I went into the potash mine. It was an experience.
It's an amazing experience. I did that a few years ago.
It's really neat. So got to do that. I got stopped by Border Patrol agents.
Good. So they got my call. Don't let them back
he was,
in.
Taking contraband. Over
this was going into Canada. Got stopped in Winnipeg. And I think you know. I didn't realize this was happening. I knew other farm broadcasters were going on the trip, some other other networks and things, people that I know. And we all ended up, our first flight went into Minneapolis, and we like all met up there. There were like four or five of us. So we're all, we get up to, you know, the customs agent, the Border Patrol agents, all at the same time. And I guess none of them were you know thrilled to see us. I think the nature of their job. They're
one. You're media. You're an American too, probably.
Yeah, I mean it's just like they just. I think they're predisposed to be like suspicious of everyone, which I guess you know.
They heard the podcast and talk about maple syrup too. I think
yeah, there's some slander.
But so I'm going into Winnipeg and we're all there. But I'm pretty sure that the guy that I went up to just flat out did not believe what my profession was. So he put a red mark on my sheet and he's like, thank you. Have a nice day. And I didn't know anything about it until we got to the next guy. And he's like, all right, you guys can go on through, but you, sir, need to follow the red line of the office. And I'm like, oh, great. So that guy's like, okay, so I've never heard of this farm broadcasting thing before. But now there are like, you know, five of you. Like, what is this? So... had to explain it to him, had to go through the whole thing, but you know, no cavity searches or anything. It was just, it's just they didn't know what it is I did. And
did they ever figure it out? Because we're trying to figure that out too.
I was like, we've got a website and everything, guys. Like we're legit, I promise.
Yeah, that took like 2 minutes on ChatGPT, right?
But no, it was an interesting trip, you know, outside of that. We did get laid over in Winnipeg and got delayed for quite a while. So I had time to get through with the Border Patrol agents. So, I don't know. Maybe I'm the suspicious looking one. I always joke with CJ because every time we go somewhere, he gets stopped by TSA because of like the microphones and stuff in his bag. Mm. It's never happened to me. Mm. So I'm like, CJ, you just look suspicious, dude. They see this stuff and they're like, all right, this dude, no. Sure. But no, this time it was me. It was me. So what else has happened since then? Again, a lot of harvest. Mm-hmm. You guys have been actually working? Is that?
Well, yeah, in the combine, so I make that work.
Yeah, you know? Okay. I usually step out and throw a little dirt on my shirt, you know.
Just to make it look good?
Make sure, yep.
make your students think you're doing something? Yeah, there we go.
The grease fell on the boots yesterday, so it helped oil the boots. I mean, it wasn't like I intended for that, but yeah, it happens.
Okay. Well, it's been going at a pretty rapid clip here, and I think it will continue to do so as the forecast continues to look nice. In listening to Chief Meteorologist Ryan Martin's forecast, looks like We might get a little bit of rain in the southern part of the state this weekend. Maybe. It's a possibility, but spits and sprinkles would be all that it is. And even if that happens, I mean, gosh, we're on a nice stretch here of weather. Dan, what does it look like for you on the corn side?
Yeah, stuff is moving quickly. It's drying down quickly. You know, I was telling both of you here earlier today, we started our harvesting a lot of our trials here in West Lafayette. We had some April 29th planted corn, you know, 111-day hybrids that were shelling about 17% last night. A lot of our trials have been 17, 18, 19, 20%, so right in the sweet spot for harvest. Stuff is moving quickly. It's even, you can notice it when you start in the morning and then you get to the afternoon just with, you know, the hot and dry conditions we've had. But I'd say, you know, farmer specific, right, around this area and other areas, a lot of the focus has been on soybeans, still a lot of corn that's out in the fields. But with this weather, the stuff is progressing quickly. I think, you know, we saw very similar type things last year. I do think, you know, one, you know, potential plus, I know there's some negatives that Sean will talk about on the soybean side, but corn, you know, you think about where prices are, if they can save a little bit of money on propane, that's not a bad thing. And also getting harvest done quickly in the fall, that allows you to get a few more things done in the fall, instead of relying on getting a lot more done in the spring. But stuff is moving fast, and the weather is a big part of that.
And right now, as we talk about progress, I believe it was 16% on corn in the state, 24% on soybeans. And Sean, it is going fast, and there are some issues out there because of how fast we're going. But all in all, I mean, we're seeing some good things come off, right?
Yeah, the yields have been good for the early stuff that we're cutting right now, right? So I think back to the middle of September, we had already kind of gone through, it's been dry, it's been hot, and so we were cutting like 2 weeks ago in our mid-April plantings, and they were running really good yields. And again, I don't want to go too much on these yields, they were the 90s, and they were a few hundreds. And so early beans planted early, had some moisture early. But we're already 2 weeks ago running 10%. So that grain moisture content is going to continue to be an issue for us. It's hard to look a gift horse in the mouth and turn away in terms of, I've got 8, 10, 12 hours of harvest today I could run. And so that's the hard spot with us on the soybean front, is that, you know, it's been sunny since sunrise, hardly any clouds. And so then you can run by 10 o'clock easy with no issues, maybe 11 o'clock, and we'll catch 13% for 30 minutes. And then it's going to be, I was cutting yesterday, I was down to 9% yesterday for several days. So that's what we've been kind of contending with, is just those issues with fast drying when you 85, 90 degree weather. That's continued to be the case. Yields on the stuff that has come off, not only here locally, I've got some others that have pulled off in the southeast and up in the northwest. And so yields on the early stuff have been pretty good. So I'd say right around the 70s for field averages on some of the bigger fields. And down in the southeast, they think about some of the rough conditions they had. Now, these fields in particular were planted earlier, and so we haven't gotten to the rough stuff yet. So the stuff that had lots of rain or got slammed in the ground and compromised root system. So that's when it's really going to hit the fan.
Yeah, a lot of the stuff that's come off has been probably the best stuff we'll see this year. A lot of it was the timely planted stuff and the better fields, you know, better drained areas. I know in a lot of the challenging areas this year, none of the corn's been touched yet. I always say there's with this state, and one thing I've learned with this state over the last few years is you can almost draw a line and split it in half from north to south. It seems like the east side of the state gets kind of the brunt end of the stick, and the west part of the state usually ends up being a little bit better, at least over the last few years it seems like that. But the western part of the state, you know, that's where I've seen, you know, corn starting to come off with some of our cooperators, and then our own trials as well. But a lot of those were timely planted, good conditions, they were planted, they had, you know, decent rainfall, and yields have been good. We've, you know, had some of our best fields in this area, you know, above the 300 bushel mark as well, but a lot of 270s, 280s in these fields. But again, these are productive really good areas, you know, timely planting, had, you know, pretty strong conditions. So to reiterate Sean's point, we haven't gotten to the rough stuff yet. Yeah. So be real curious to see where those numbers come in a lot of those areas.
Well, and as we talk about the rough areas, you're right. The past several years anyway, I hate to be this guy. We can point to Northeast Indiana up around that Fort Wayne area.
Yeah.
It has been rough for several years now for those folks. And I'm guessing at this point we may not be hearing much from that part of the state, because didn't we get a pretty late start up there?
Yeah, late. I would say Northeast. I would almost say the whole eastern parts of the state. Yeah. Northeast to east, you know, our Research Farm, Randolph County over there. I mean, they tend to struggle over there. I think the big issue this year is they kind of got it on both ends of the spectrum. Yep. It was super wet early, and they were behind with planting. And now you look at the drought monitor, and look where the worst drought spots are in the state, the eastern part of the state. So you think about, you know, compromised root systems and late planting and you know, a lot of unevenness in the crop in those areas. And then you throw on top of it when they're trying to finish grain filling, and they're in a, you know, D1, D2 drought in those areas. So, yeah, we haven't gotten to those areas. But, again, those areas, challenging soils, challenging environments, they just have a lot more challenges in those areas. And it's been that way for the last couple of years.
Yeah, we're cutting beans up in the Northeast today, and so I'd be curious to see how those come off. Those were last week of May plantings, and so it's the same story. Yeah. It's just going to be interesting to see how those peg out, right? Yeah. I think about same exact conditions, the compromised root systems and how dry it has been. So we're probably going to have some BBs coming through there, and we'll see what the numbers are.
To give you a perspective of the difference from here to Northeast, we have a harvest timing trial that we are replicating here in West Lafayette and then in Northeast Indiana. My grad students finished the last harvest timing at 16% moisture last night for a harvest timing trial here. Northeast Indiana, they haven't even started the first harvest timing, which we started at about 28-29% with that harvest timing. So just same hybrids, right? But just shows you the difference, one, in the environment, but also just the sheer difference in when things got planted in those areas.
And we talk about variable, and this has been, you know, we joke is kind of the, you know, let's play the drinking game. How many times will they say variable on this podcast? But it's really gotten even more so this year than any other. And Sean, I think, you know, you're a little bit farther along in harvest here with soybeans. Again, I think, 24%?
Yeah, 24%, yeah.
And then compared to 16%. Yep. And you've got a lot more soybeans out there, too. Yep. I mean, my goodness.
Eventually, the pendulum will swing back, I think.
Yeah, we'll, I was going to say, it may shift back if we just never sell soybeans again. So we might just have
let's not get into the markets on this sore subject now.
Tell me about it. But just as you go along and the variability from north to south, east to west, not even just in Indiana, but as you go out, you know, to other states as well. It's everywhere.
Yeah, it is. And, I mean, even, okay, just use fields here. The water is the name of the game of this, right? The access to water. And so whether that is compromised root systems or just some depressional areas that happen to have a little bit more moisture, or they had too much moisture when they plant. So you kind of walk through all that. I was cutting beans this week, and, again, we've got the eastern part of the field around 9,500 bushel, and we go to the central part that had some compromised root systems on a portion, we're around 60. And there are 2 weeks difference in planting dates. Now, planting dates certainly have played a role, like they've typically have over these years, that we tend to do better with the earlier plantings. But when we don't have water, things shut down, and the beans aren't going to just hold on. They're going to just survive as best they can. In that, some other issues that have been popping up. So this variability within the field, within the state and the area, is if we have had good growing conditions and then we turned off dry, what ends up happening, we've got all this, I call it just this reservoir. You think about a water tower, right? You got all the water up there and it's going to get distributed throughout. Well, we've got the same thing with the soybean plants, that they've created all this leaf biomass, harvest in the sunlight, and then now the reservoir is a photosynthate and it doesn't have anywhere to go because the pods are aborting or the seeds are like, I'm done, I can't do it anymore. And so within that, we're catching a lot of green stem soybeans this year. It's coming into this idea that, again, we've got the reservoir. We don't have a demand for it anymore. There's no more residents in the town that need to take that water, that photosynthates, and so the stems have been maintained. So we have the nasty combination of running 9-10% beans with green stems and have to slow down the harvest.
I was getting ready to ask you about just that because I'm seeing kind of all over social media that this green stem issue is a big one this year with how dry it's been and how slow things have been moving.
Yeah, and we've got to go out there and still get them timely. The hopes of some rain to bring some water back on the moisture content, that'd be great. But at the end of the day, you also have to balance, okay, how many fields do I need to get through? When can I get through? It is just October 1, so in one way, we could wait. But the struggle with it is these beans are already ready. If they're just dry and dry fields, 80-degree weather, 90-degree weather, we'll probably be okay. They'll still be 8-9%. The worry about dehiscence or this idea of just pod shattering before the combine gets in is really when we get in wet, dry cycles. All right, so last week we had a decent amount of rain across areas. That's one wet cycle on some of this. I have caught this week where we had some early beans that are already starting to dehesce, right? So that's the idea that the pods open up and the seeds just shatter. It's just a mechanism of survival, right? It's trying to seed itself. Now, if your fields weren't ready yet, that's probably not going to be the case. But if we catch another cycle of rain or we get into these 2 to 3 cycles of wet, dry, yeah, that's a point where that pod really gets to the point of I'm going to shatter in the field before the combine even gets there.
Yeah. Now, at this point, Dan, you know, we keep talking about soybean moisture and, you know, they're ready to go. Yeah. You talked about corn and yeah, in some cases it's ready to go. It's right at that sweet spot.
Yeah.
Are we concerned at this point? Like if we go and try to get all these beans out because they need to get out, we still good to leave that corn hanging around for a while?
Yeah, as much as, you know, pains me to say, but, you know, prioritization right now is on the soybean front. And I'll say, you know, I've been in the middle of you know, harvesting soybeans and plugging up the machine, and no thanks. I'll rather harvest corn any day than dealing with that. I've seen quite a bit of videos and pictures. I know it's happening around the state, just trying to slug things through. But yeah, the corn, you know, the big thing we worry about in areas has been stalk quality, right? I know there's some stalk quality issues out there. Some of our own trials, I've seen some lodging here and there, but a lot of it's, you know, really stressful environments or specific treatments. But it's definitely more susceptible. Other thing, you know, you notice when that corn gets really dry is just how it shells. You know, in terms of a lot of times when it hits that header, you're going to see a lot more kernel shattering and going on. And that, just be mindful of that stuff as the moisture changes and you go from field to field. But yeah, corn is still sitting pretty good. The big things I worry about is stalk quality at this point in time. Not real worried. You know, I mentioned, you know, there's been some ear rots out there here and there in pockets, but small amounts. When you get this really dry conditions right now, we're not really worried about it at this point in time in terms of progressing. But yeah, just I would still focus on the soybeans, get them out. But corn, you know, we actually saw this last year. You know, we always talk about when soybeans get below 13% moisture and, you know, think about the water weight and money you're losing. That can happen with corn, right? It's much rarer that it happens.
Yeah, you guys can start at 28% and go all the way down to 17%. Oh, we got to get that corn out. So you got 9 percentage points. I've got 1.
Yep. Exactly. But in severe cases, right, last year there was corn coming out 13%, 14%. But that's, again, it's a rare case that can happen.
So on that, to put some numbers to it, I did this last year and I can do it again or we can share it. But on moisture weight alone, if let's say we have a field that's run 70% or 70 bushels and we go from a 13% down to a 10%, that's roughly a 3-bushel loss per acre just on water weight, because we don't sell soybeans, we don't sell corn in the volume bushel. I mean, if we sold it on volume bushel, we'd probably be fine. but it's on 60-pound nuggets, and no one back calculates them, gives you those 3 percentage points of water. Only us researchers do that to make sure that everything's equal in terms of here were the yield levels, so then you can have everything equal, right? So unfortunately, the elevators don't do this and everything else. So we're looking at 3 bushel per acre loss just on running 10.9% beans on the 70 bushel field.
And that adds on to my soapbox that the volume bushel is probably one of the dumbest measurements out there.
I get why we started that way, right?
But it's we're getting farmers getting paid off of weight, right? That's what we're after is weight. But there's some issues when you have that volume bushel.
Yeah, but let's go and bring in test weight then, right? You want to start to have that argument?
Open a whole another can of worms.
But yeah. I mean, that's the whole reason of having test weight is that okay? We have a volume that we quote do yield on, but we really don't. It's units, right? Mm-hmm. It's 60-pound units. It's 56 pound units.
Yep.
But then the test weight is like, okay, it's like somehow we're doing the magic and it's like, oh, here's how it changes. Well, we're not selling it like that anymore.
Yep.
And not that we're going to have a widespread, Eric, you can have this influence. You are the influencer here to say, we need to change how yields are done on corn and soybeans. And we need to change how I would love if I could do one thing with the soybean industry is just say our standard is like 10 or 11% moisture. Just to do that alone, I think would revolutionize what our growers and farmers and retailers would get out of this.
I tell you what, go ahead and write something up and I'll see if I can put my name on it.
There you go.
Okay, we'll see what we can do.
I'll sneak some extra words in there so it's your name associated with it.
I think that, right now, Dan, the biggest question that's out there is, do you have your corn cannibal costume ready to go for later this month?
It's in the works.
It's in the works. Okay.
Yep. My wife is, good sewer, good crafter. She's working on it.
Okay. Dan, the corn cannibal Quinn. I think that's what we need for the Halloween costume. Hey, when we come back here on the Purdue Crop Chat, let's talk a little bit more about harvest. Again, I think we had this argument last year. Is it droughty or is it drouthy? We might need to bring that back up here, but we've got a lot of those areas across the state. We'll talk about that and more harvest when we come back on the Purdue Crop Chat, presented by the Indiana Corn Marketing Council and Indiana Soybean Alliance.
I'm Matthew Chapman, and I farm in Henry County, Indiana. Indiana Soybean Alliance and Indiana Corn Marketing Council invest checkoff dollars into building demand for corn and soybeans internationally. I've seen this work firsthand, and it's been eye-opening to see the growth in these markets, which also brings dollars back to our farms. Promoting U.S. corn and soybeans and increasing global demand is critical to the success of farmers right here in Indiana.
This message is brought to you by the Indiana Soybean and Corn Checkoffs.
And we're back on the Purdue Crop Chat at the Indiana Corn and Soybean Innovation Center in West Lafayette. If you're watching on our Facebook or YouTube channel, you might notice we're in a slightly different spot than we have been previously. It's largely because I forgot stuff.
And you just want to, your penmanship is just, well, it's there.
It's there. I'm not exactly what you would call artsy fartsy.
Maybe half that.
Yes.
You can decide which half.
Yeah. Well, I always argued with my elementary and middle school art teachers that I was just going to get rich someday, and if I needed someone to do art for me, I'd pay them. Not my
how's
favorite
that going
thing.
For you?
Yeah, I was going to ask, how's that going for you?
You can see I didn't have time to pay anyone to do the artwork for today, and it wasn't in the budget either. So, this is where we're at. We are looking at some new digs potentially. We'll talk about that in coming weeks here on the Purdue Crop Chat. But anyway, let's keep talking about harvest. And Dan, I'll go to you first. Is it droughty or is it drouthy? What's the appropriate term?
I plead the fifth. Yeah.
Oh, come on now.
Oh, I'll stand on it. It's droughty. Yes.
It's droughty. It's got to be, right?
It's got to be droughty.
I've never heard of drouthy before.
I get it all the time from some farmers, from some agronomists. It's out there.
Where are they from?
Must be from the south.
You think so?
I think that's a northern thing. I don't know. I was waiting for the Michigan guy to say drouthy. I was like,
is that how they say it in Canada? Yeah. I just like.
All right, we need to phone Megan. All right,
Drouthy A. That's how they say in Canada.
You know, when I was in Canada, I only heard A twice, and I'm like, maybe we just really, over dramatized
this. We shamed them so much.
Yeah, or they've just taken it out of their vocabulary now. I did get a lot of a boots.
Okay. Yes,
a boot. And
drag that O. Yep.
Yeah. So I did get a lot of that, but no, only two A's.
Okay.
So I don't know. Maybe we're just making it up, A. But we do have some droughty parts of the state.
Yep.
And really, here with, those numbers that we talked about, 24% harvest on soybeans, 16% on corn, that was as of Monday. We've got another beautiful week across the state this week.
Next week looks good, too. Yeah.
Sounds like next week we might get a little bit of a cool down, but it's still going to be dry.
Yeah.
Gosh, we could be almost done with this thing before too long. We'll have farmers wrapped up here
now
soon.
Now, watch what you say. Watch what you say with that.
Is this wood? I'll knock on it. I'm just saying we've got some folks moving along at a nice clip.
We do. We do. And I think that there's a good opportunity to get a lot of fields out, get a lot of fields prepped, soil sampled. All those things are set up again. The thing that comes back to my mind is now two harvest seasons in a row of dry, right? I think of last year, 6-7 weeks kind of rings a bell in my mind right now. And we're right there again. And so great to get fields out and get them worked. But then also if you work them. But I go back to fertility. I go back to, okay, if you did any soil samples last year or you said, I'm going to hold off. I'm going to get some moisture back because there is some issues with some of our fertility recs whenever we go too dry. And so we need to be mindful of that. So that's what keeps coming back to my mind is like two falls in a row. So if you held off last year, you went in and took samples, but, I'm usually every 2 years, maybe I want to do it again. Well, I don't know if I'd want to do it again because it's probably going to be pretty similar in terms of just dry conditions. Potassium in particular is the one I'm thinking of.
I say going from year to year, and couldn't that give you some information if it's the same?
Yeah, but again, it depends on how they're rotating through their soil samples, right? If they're rotating, a lot of people just do soybeans every year. If they're a corn-soybean rotation, they're like, I need to go back. I'm going to go back to the same field. So this year it was in corn. I'm going to go back again. Just to be mindful is what I'm kind of driving at is, if you had numbers from last year, and they're probably pretty low, I'm guessing, on some of the potassium numbers as an example.
Okay. Dan, what do we need to be thinking about here as we move forward? It's, just sit back and watch guys do soybeans while you eat coffee, donuts, Tim Hortons.
Eat coffee. That's some cowboy coffee, right? You're eating it.
Drink coffee, eat donuts. There we go. Some Tim Hortons. I mean, what?
We don't have Tim Hortons around here.
Oh, but, okay.
Up north we do.
Up north.
Yeah.
But, is that really the focus right now?
Same thing with the beans. Corn is, there's going to be a lot more corn starting to come off here, especially this week and next week with the dry conditions. So stuff's going to keep rolling. I remember last year farmers telling us, hey, I wish I need a rain day just so I can get a break. Because they just kept going. And when you have weather like this, you can just keep going. But it's important to get both crops out of the field. If we can want to have these drying conditions, there are some pluses to getting it out early, right? And Sean mentioned, the stuff you can get done in the fall might be able to save on some of the drying costs too, in some of these areas. But be mindful of soil samples. If there's cover crops going out, I know there's going to be some wheat getting put in over the next couple weeks too. A lot of that, might just sit for a while until it catches some rain. I've actually seen some areas where they had some soil moisture in it and cover crops and actually some early wheat kind of shot out of the ground because the soil temps are still pretty warm. out there. But those are things that, you know, in terms of the timeliness, it's nice to have an early harvest. You think about strip till and in areas mm-hmm. fall strip till, they can get that done. Some of the fertility out there too. It just kind of helps you set up better for the spring in terms of that. But yeah, I mean, the big thing is over the next couple weeks is just seeing harvest. I'll be real curious to see where yields are with some of those more challenging areas. You know, I'm starting to see some preliminary data, areas that, you know, had severe disease and differences with fungicide and no fungicide. I'll be real curious to see how those shake out as well. Curious to see, you know, areas that had bad southern rust that maybe haven't had it in the past, where those are at. But yeah, the big thing is just I'm real curious to see where yields are in some of those more challenging spots and how those shake out. But then also starting to look at some of the treatment differences across a lot of the trials we have.
I was just going to say, I mean, it's hard to do much thinking right now because you are just going 100 miles an hour every which way. But we are in a season financially that we need to be thinking about, okay, what makes sense, all right, in terms of whether it's fertility, whether it's tillage, or do we switch the farm to something that's less passes, less diesel going across. So I think this is an opportunity. So even though maybe could finish up earlier, according to Eric, do we continue doing business as usual, or do we have the time to think, if we haven't already, say, do I want to do everything exactly the same, or do I take this opportunity this fall? It's like, I want to compare a strip till versus a full conventional till mm-hmm. program, or talk to a dealer, or talk to those that have got demo units. So I think there's a lot. We talk during growing season a lot about what are we going to test. There's still equally as much things that you can test this fall for the 26 season. So I think that's something else to be mindful of.
Yeah, I think, you know, when prices are the way they are, you know, the more you can learn, the better in terms of, you know, being a little bit more efficient next year. You know, I've talked to some farmers that are full no-till now, and the reason they are full no-till now is because the 1980s. In the 80s, they said we need to cut costs, and they said, well, we burn less diesel if we go to no-till, and then they've been no-till since. Now, doesn't mean that everyone needs to move to no-till the same cost, but that's, you know, kind of where that idea comes from. You know, we always recommend this in terms of, you know, check strips, or, you know, looking at individual trials or doing something to check on things or see what works and what doesn't. I come back to the point, you know, this point for me, even in our own research trials, is, you know, really pay attention to your genetics and the hybrids you choose. It blows my mind every year. You know, we'll have a single field worth of trials, and we'll have, you know, I think in our one field we have anywhere from, you know, 9 to 12 different hybrids out there. And some of them are same maturity, same traits out there, same insect traits, same BT traits, same herbicide tolerance traits, you know, even within the same company. And one will yield, you know, 300 and the other one is 270, right? And just the differences in genetics and how they behave and how they perform in different environments. And, you know, there's a lot of factors that go into that, you know, in terms of disease protections and stuff like that. But genetics, you know, trying multiple hybrids, trying across companies. I have a farmer I work with in Southwest Indiana. He sent me some data. They were trying, you know, I think 10, 15 hybrids on his farm. I'm just looking at what worked and what didn't. You know, just those differences always stand out to me. And that can, you know, it's always shocking just the differences, even in the same field, same environment, side by side, you know, very similar traits and maturity, how much they can differ. So, you know, working with your seed folks, your seed agronomists, you know, trying different hybrids, you know, I always come back to that genetics piece, and that can really, you know, help with, you know, get into, you know, better seed is often going to be more expensive, but again, that can help you maybe save some things on down the line in terms of disease control and standability and yield and a lot of those aspects with good genetics.
Now, Sean, I may have done you a disservice.
Once.
I think he has.
Yeah.
I have dubbed you Soybean Sean Castile, but you know that's not all you do.
Yep.
You are the small grains specialist, right?
That's right.
So should we call you Small Grains Sean?
You can call me whatever. Okay. Doesn't mean I'll answer to it. Just don't call me Sue.
Life ain't easy for a boy named Sue. Dan did bring up wheat and getting that planted. Yep. Anything that folks should be thinking about from that standpoint here as we kind of get toward that season here too?
Yeah, no, wheat is going to be a similar situation in terms of a corn and soybean. If, hey, we're pulling off corn, soybeans, some guys go right after corn, not always the best situation, but some go after soybeans. I think I go back to what are the field conditions, what's your target seed rate. So you come into that, again, that balancing act. I think about the economic times that we're in and the variability that we've had in rainfall. Mm-hmm. I think about the Northeast. And I was like, there's a lot of wheat up there. There's a lot of wheat up there for a reason, as well as the Southwest and then scattering throughout. So how can you balance, you know, weather conditions? So wheat is a good option. Now, think about market price, that comes back to it. As you plant wheat, dry seed, whether it's corn, soybeans, wheat, cover crops, dry seed and dry soil will sit, right? And so don't lose heart if you happen to be planting the wheat in dry conditions and nothing's coming up after 3 weeks, 4 weeks. The big thing with wheat that we run, small reds typically, is that as long as it's imbibing the water, germinating, we'd love to have a stand already spiking, right, this fall. Mm-hmm. But as long as it has imbibed the water and started that process, it will get the vernalization that it needs during the winter. In other words, we need a cold snap so then it can fully develop in the spring and the summer. So if that's of a mind, right, we plant the wheat, it's dry, nothing's coming up. Eventually, when the rains do come back, because they will come back at some point, maybe in November, I don't know, hopefully I'm not saying it's that late, but as long as you dig them up, they've germinated, you'll be fine. So I just kind of put that in that context of how dry are we going to be? We should still be okay.
Yeah, wheat's pretty fascinating. I used to work a lot in wheat in Michigan, and you know, there's farmers up there, they might not get harvested till, you know, getting close to Thanksgiving. Yep. And they'll put wheat in the ground. It's not even up.
Yep.
Doesn't even come up till the spring, and it still does pretty well. I do think, you know, your point on wheat, you know, with earlier harvest too, there might be a chance to maybe back off on those seed rates a little bit too on wheat. But I also add this old adage to plant wheat into dust, the bins will bust. I remember that.
Mm-hmm.
So okay. Might be a good wheat year next year.
Okay. All I know is I heard one of our market analysts say that we've got so much wheat globally, it's not even funny right now. So
are you just saying we're too good at producing, you know, these grains that we've got?
I don't know that it's us.
True.
It's everywhere.
Sure.
But, you know, wheat's been taking it on the chin a little bit in the market, just like corn and beans have.
Sure.
So hopefully we can get some things moved around there. That's a different discussion for a different podcast,
sure.
I think.
Sure.
Final thoughts here. Dan, I'll start with you. Final thoughts. Check your settings. All the things, right?
Check your settings. You know, look out the back of the machine, right? Same with planting, especially as you're jumping from moisture, field to field. You know, there's a lot of areas in the state that I know that had corn that was planted April 24th and May 24th, right? So, you know, think about calibrations and yield monitors and also just the harvest settings and stuff like that. So be mindful of all those things. You know, we have great access to data with our machinery today, but if it's not calibrated or set up properly, it's not going to tell you anything. So gives us a really good chance to learn, but make sure that you're following all the specifications and calibration, everything like that. We're still kind of on the front end of harvest. We'll see over the next couple of weeks, you know, if it stays as dry and hot as it's been, stuff's going to move pretty quickly. So we'll start to know a lot more over the next couple of weeks.
And follow up on that corn harvest is not only see what's coming out the tail end to make sure you're not losing the grain, which is priority.
Yeah.
That residue, I mentioned it last time, I think we both talked about it. I was like, I'm tired of following just 10-foot wide paths of just nothing but corn residue. Let's do our job with harvest to make sure that residue really gets dispersed, so then next year on that soybean, we have the best opportunity for stand establishment. I think we have been doing ourselves a disservice with how large we've gone in some of these combines, and we get the corn out, and again, going 12 rows, 16 rows, that's pretty fun.
Yeah.
But if we're not distributing, that's going to be an eyesore and a yield robber next year on the soybean.
Yeah, and the newer machines too, you know, there's a lot of differences. And you think about, you know, the tailboard systems and the residue spread systems on the back of the machines. You know, there's new machines now that they can control the RPMs, control the spread patterns on those, at least try and get that width out there. But yeah, I know John's got some really good pictures out here just in terms of the poor residue spread on corn. I saw pretty recently, maybe a couple weeks ago, Iowa State put out a really nice article, extension article on residue spread with machines. So they're seeing a lot of issues with it. And in Iowa, I think they did some economic calculations as like $40 an acre that they saw with poor, you know, residue spread that they thought they were losing on the soybean front. Yeah, so not only pay attention to the grain coming out of the back, look at that residue spread. I mean, the yields keep going. When the yields keep going up, you know what else keeps going up? The stover and the residue as well. So
yep.
Even in our own trials, you know, I was walking some of our harvested areas yesterday, and I was like, man, there's a lot of residue out here. So you get, you know, more northern parts of the state, right? We just don't have the conditions to break that down. We have, you know, harder winters, you know, cooler temps. We just don't see the breakdown that you're going to see in more southern areas as well. So, yeah, be mindful of that. That's a good point.
Is it too early to pull out his soapbox about fall anhydrous? Are we too early for that?
You can do whatever you want.
Don't put fall anhydrous when it's 85 degrees.
Oh, when 75, we're okay. So next week, we get a cool down next week. We're good to go, right? I mean, there's fields that are out, right? So might as well get the work done so we can enjoy Thanksgiving.
We won't get on that soapbox yet. We have Megan here now. I'll just pass that. But I will say this. We've harvested some of our trials to – we do a lot of nitrogen timing work. We don't do a lot of fall work, but we do a lot of spring pre-plant N versus side dress N. And I can tell you, especially this year, that we lost nitrogen for a fact in a lot of our areas. And we can see stark difference. We saw this last year, stark differences when you think about in-season N applications, even versus, you know, early spring applied nitrogen. So just be mindful of those things. You know, it might be cheaper to put anhydrous on, but if you're putting it in the fall or even, you know, in some cases the early spring, you could be losing quite a bit too. And we've noticed that even in some of our preliminary trials that we've harvested.
Sean, final thoughts here as we wrap up today's Purdue Crop Chat.
Yeah, I'll still stay on this soapbox of residue because I want that spread. Well, just because you have a VT, just because you have a ripper, just because you have a tillage tool, that doesn't always fix it either, right? Because I've seen the poor residue management and coming in with the VT as an example, those same spots will show up. It helps. So let's just not think that we're going to solve the problem with the tillage, right? I think there's still going to be that issue. So I want to finish that soapbox moment on residue management on the soybean establishment for next year. As we come into continuing to get the rest of the harvest, the remaining three-fourths of the harvest, be as timely as we can. And again, we're under the gun in terms of beautiful weather. Let's get it out. We're taking it on the chin with moisture losses. If you want to play the game of get some moisture back, just be mindful of, okay, when was it mature? How many wet cycles have I had? If I've already had one, you can probably withstand another one. But after that, we're going to start to see some loss from the field. So if you're trying to save bushels and get them back with moisture, you probably have one more event to do that, I'm guessing, with a lot of these fields. Otherwise, we're probably going to have to pull the trigger, get them out. The other side, both crops will have, there's acres in the state that run cover crops. And so that same mentality of getting those out, soil to seed contact, dry soil, dry seed, they're not going to germinate. So just be mindful if you're trying to a cover crop that maybe a push. Yeah, we're getting out earlier. Just because you planted October 1st, October 2nd, some of these legumes I'm thinking of, that doesn't mean anything if it doesn't germinate and emerge, right? So it can still be, we don't have enough time for that. So think about what you want for that cover crop selection.
And I'll add to this too, you know, corn is the major culprit for poor residue spread. Soybeans can be bad too, right? So even just poor residue spread out of the back of a soybean harvester, we saw that even here in areas where you're getting poor, you know, distribution, poor spread with soybeans too, that can still impact your corn. And even a lot of these fields were either fall or early spring VT'd, and we still saw the problems, right? So it doesn't mean that tillage is going to solve all your problems with that residue spread. So be mindful of both crops and different machines.
Final thing for me is just be safe out there, guys. It's dry. I've seen enough pictures that just break my heart of black smoking fields. And so I think we all know it, but in the rush of harvest, it's like, let me just run out there with the truck right quick. And you think about catalytic converter, right? It's just does not end well. Let's just be safe.
You took it right out of my mouth. Last week was National Farm Safety and Health Week, and it really is a week that highlights a lot of the on-farm hazards that our farmers deal with and the entire ag industry. And I think for maybe the only time ever, they'll let me speak for them. Please stay safe. Please take the proper steps, and you know, have that fire extinguisher with you in the combine. Like, do all the things to make sure that you come home to your family at the end of the day, because that is the most important thing, not necessarily that crop.
Yeah, and you get into, you know, where we have these stretches, right? And you know, I know farmers, right? And I have some of that. I know
they
we just keep going. That's just, you go kind of in your blood, and you just keep going and going. But when you have, you know, weeks straight where you just keep, you know, you get tired, you start making mistakes, stuff gets broken, stuff happens, you know, don't be afraid to take breaks and take care of yourself out there.
Mental health as well. Absolutely. And I know that Purdue Extension has some resources for that as well through their Purdue Farm Stress Team. You can find a lot of that info on our website as well, HoosierAgToday.com. So, guys, thank you. You guys stay safe, too, and we'll do this again in a couple weeks, all right?
Sounds good.
The Purdue Crop Chat is presented by the Indiana Corn Marketing Council and Indiana Soybean Alliance. Thanks for joining us.
This has been Purdue Crop Chat, a regular series featuring Purdue Extension's Dr. Dan Quinn and Dr. Sean Castile, made possible by the Indiana Corn and Soybean Checkoffs, the Indiana Corn Marketing Council, and the Indiana Soybean Alliance. The checkoffs are pleased to help bring you agronomy insights from Purdue Extension. Opinions on the podcast are those of the host and guests and not those of the sponsor. Purdue Crop Chat is a service of Purdue University Extension and Hoosier Ag Today. Timely, relevant, credible.